Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
Oh, my God.
And this week's Unsplendable, what are we doing?
I've been so busy, George. I have so much to tell you. I was at the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade Luncheon. I heard the NW debate between all the leaders. I'm keeping my eyes peeled on the U.S. And we have federal politics to talk about. That's all straight ahead.
Let's get into it. Okay, so you had a lunch.
I did. Okay, so as part of this lunch, it was the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade luncheon. I was actually invited on behalf of Sport BC. I'm working a little bit with Kids Sport, trying to only work on things that really feed my soul right now. And Kids Sport and Sport BC are definitely like right in the thumpy part of my heart. So I sat at their table and I was really happy to be there as all three party leaders, BC NDP David Eby, Sonia Furstenow of the Green Party and John Rustad from the BC Conservative Party. And it was an interesting program, George, because each of the leaders had the opportunity to give a 10-minute speech. Mm-hmm. And then each of them had an individual sit down with the president and CEO of the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade, Bridget Anderson, former colleague of mine at Vancouver Television, longtime journalist, who does a great job. I think Bridget does a magnificent job. So and of all the business leaders that are in the room, like everybody from C-SPAN to BCRFA and Ian Tossenson and the team, like it was a who's who in that room. I don't know what the hell I was doing there, but anyway, I do. Sorry, I take that back. But these three leaders had just come off of a 90-minute leadership debate that was carried live on CKNW. Mike Smith moderated that debate masterfully, I might add. Smitty sometimes in a debate can sort of show his stripe, like he's a really strong broadcaster.
Part of the debate.
Right. He didn't. I enjoy it when he does, and I'm glad that he didn't in this particular one because it really gave the leaders room to show, you know, the teeth of it, the meat of it. Mm-hmm. And as part of the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade discussion, sit down, Richard Zussman was there. And I can't remember the woman's name who did some recent polling about what the most important issues are for people and businesses. So residents, as well as specifically businesses in Metro Vancouver are currently. So there was a lot to discuss. And interestingly, in the radio debate, I will say that it was clear that it was Rustad versus EB in this situation. And Sonia Furstenow, who is a very savvy and well-spoken party leader, couldn't really fit into the conversation because she wants to bring it back to the environment. She wants to bring it back to big oil. But big oil doesn't have a lot to do with homelessness and addiction issues and affordability crisis and economics. And you know what I mean? It does have attachments to the economy, but it was tough for her.
But this is a big loss for the Greens not to take advantage of this split that we have right now to find a center and win that center vote. You know, they're just not really grabbing it.
And at the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade luncheon, I think she did capture some of it because Bridget brought up 2017. And with the new polling that is out, George, and I have it here, the most recent Léger poll is showing that the momentum is there for the BC Conservative Party. So that should give some fear to the NDP, right? I mean, but you have to win a certain number in certain ridings. We talk about it all the time strategically. It's not about a popular vote across British Columbia, but 46% of those who say they will be casting a ballot say they will do so for the BC Conservatives and 43% for the incumbent BC NDP, 10% for the Green Party. So, and Sonia Furstenow, because they drew names randomly, who would be going in what order. So it went Rustad, EB, Furstenow. And so when Sonia went up, she goes, three things. First, that I'm the only woman leader. I'm the only actual elected leader. And then she said, and I'm the only leader in full-blown menopause, which brought the house down. Everybody laughed their heads off. It was so funny. So she diffused the room a little bit with that. And she did her speech, very well spoken. Then she sat down with Bridget, and Bridget kind of went, we could be looking at 2017 all over again here. Like, if the vote is truly split, down the middle for the NDP and the Conservatives, the balance of power could once again land in the hands of the Greens.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes, yes.
Right? And she...
Or in a few minutes.
I got to give you this one because at the end of that long story, Sonia Versinaux looked out at the audience and went, looks like I have John and Dave's attention. It was really quite interesting. So it's full on politicking for sure right now.
Yeah. And I think, and not to mention the few independents up north and to, you know, there's this balance of power could be held by the Greens and these independents, which interestingly, those independents are quite different than the Green Party. So I don't know how that's going to work. It's kind of like, we'll get into the federal stuff later, but
yeah,
I think what's interesting now, it's happening, and you win elections on what's called pavement politics in this province, right? And so there were several announcements today by John Rustad, a bridge, a new bridge to North Van, a train to North Van, a train in Surrey.
ICBC.
ICBC, getting rid of the age thing. All these car-related and train-related and, you know, bridge-related. This is how the NDP won in 2017. They said, oh, no more tolls to Surrey. Yay,
right.
Surrey. But, so, and Surrey, to win this election, you need Surrey. You need to take Surrey, all of Surrey. And if you can take some of, you know, some of Vancouver, you know, if you get like the West End or Yale Town, you get a couple of new ridings, you know, this makes it possible for the BC Conservatives to win. Because, of course, you're going to get, all the other seats are fairly predictable.
Tell you, there was one part, though.
Yeah.
For those who might lean in on BC Conservatives, now that BC United is no longer in this election, where David Eby was very prepared and even brought like props to the radio debate, which was interesting. No, he brought like, this is his actual, one of the candidates for the BC Conservatives on North Island. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, and I should, but sorry, I don't. Who is emphatically saying that the mRNA vaccines cause AIDS. So being pressed on, do you believe that that is true? And there was a big fat non-answer by the BC Conservative leader. And there was some waffling. You could see that the polish wasn't quite there. He was starting to speak in some terms in front of business leaders that wasn't speaking to business at the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade. On radio, he kind of bobbled it, almost like, do you believe Donald Trump won in 2020? And we're going to get to the U.S. Vice presidential debate in a second. But, you know, those moments where you're like, ooh, that's not great, that you can't just say out loud, no, mRNA vaccines do not cause AIDS.
It
does look badly to the mushy middle. I'm just saying it. There were people in the room that were like,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
But momentum.
Just saying. There. I'm not arguing it. I'm not arguing it, George. I'm bringing you the.
Let me explain where Rustad's head is right now. He doesn't care.
Sorry.
He doesn't care about that bullshit. He doesn't care about this negativity. The NDP's campaign is not resonating on that issue. Their ads aren't working. Polling proves that the polling is working. The wind is at their back for the Conservatives. In their mind, we don't know. Obviously, when we look back to 2014, we know you can kick a dog theory, you know, potential. But you've got this campaign that's now, he's making big announcements. What has the NDP announced? Anything? What's going on?
See, listen, it's so funny because it feels like you're trying to talk me into something and I'm just giving you the breakdown of what happened yesterday.
No,
I'm going to keep going with what happened yesterday because I think there's some more interesting bits to be held here. And David Eby, BC NDP leader, I keep saying Premier Eby, which he's not because the writ's dropped and only real policy wonks and politicos care about those terminologies, but it gets like picky. So David Eby had a couple of real foibles when it came to the polling that was done in the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade piece. So Rustad was weak when Eby brought up, do you doubt science? Because the guys that created the mRNA vaccine that saved the planet are sitting right over there, right? Like they were in the room, refused to answer. And then David Eby had to answer to all of the polling showing how the current government, people are saying that the current government is failing business and is failing voters. People feel unsafe in their cities they cannot access the healthcare that they need, and they are finding the affordability crisis so severe that they can barely afford where they are currently living, never mind finding a new place to live that's close to where they work. So David Eby, why John Rustad went first, and there was like, wow. And then David Eby went second, and there was like, whoa. And then Sonia Bersino actually walked up there and was like, these people are politicking like our grandparents, and it's not working anymore. And it was actually interesting to watch her hit some points. Well, it did. It sounded a lot like drill, baby, drill versus, you know, kumbaya, and versus like, none of this is working. And she kept saying, this is the pendulum swinging back and forth between the two-party system.
She tried to pull the Gordon Wilson. It didn't work. So look, she's got 10%. She's going nowhere. She might hold a balance of power, you're right, power. But at the end of the day, right now, people care about, as you mentioned, those issues and vaccines and all that other stuff that NDP is trying to make conservatives look like wing nuts, whether they are or not. It doesn't matter, because the momentum, it's not changing the numbers. It's making them worse. And so the NDP needs to change their strategy, because it's not working. They're going the wrong way. And maybe they have internal polling that's showing it's not, but I don't think they have a campaign. I don't think they know what they're doing. I don't think what does Eby stand for? What has he achieved? He should have called the election 1 month after he became leader. We talked about this way back then. I said it was crazy not to, because you got that opportunity to just own the government. He's a fill-in guy. And Rustad, you know, you could argue, killed a giant in his own party. Took over. This is the guy that go, okay, well, who's the real leader around here? The guy who killed the other guy, as far as, you know, the assumed leader of the BC, you know, United/Liberals, brought up this BC Conservative Party and it's 4 or 5% in the last election. This is crazy. This guy is, even though he doesn't have all the leadership qualities, but we have a lot of historical premiers that haven't been dynamic. He's pulling it off at this point. And I would say
you threw up air quotes there for people that are just listening. When you said leadership qualities, I would say he's an unproven entity on many, many levels. And he was kicked out of BC United or the Liberal Party for having some pretty out there positions that he's speaking to a base. And sure, you know, that's resonating with British Columbians, certainly rurally and in the interior of British Columbia, in a way that we're seeing happen across the country with the conservative movement that's happening, because the pendulum is swinging, as you say all the time. It almost doesn't matter. If you're in power for long enough, it's swinging in the other direction. Mm-hmm. And when you say David Eby doesn't really have a campaign, yesterday he did reference, when pressed on, who are you? Like, people don't trust you because you've been in power, and, you know, all of a sudden now you're going to figure out how to fix the things that are the big problems. So it was interesting. And I'm trying to, you know, pull 3 hours into a little teeny tiny diamond nugget of information here. But basically his message was, if we stop now, we'll go backwards before we can go forward, because the cuts to the things that we are currently building and doing will happen. Like, that's the promise. And there's no way to not have a deficit for the next number of years, you know, and John Rustad's promise of putting money back in British Columbians' pockets, he had to actually discuss that doesn't start for another 4 years. His promise of rebates for, you know, I'm going to fix this, but it doesn't start until 2028, was like, well, how does that work? He's like, well, I got to get the deficit down before I can do that. So we have to cut the things before we give the money. So none of the math is working out for any of them. So there's
finances don't win elections. That's that kind of stuff doesn't spin. It doesn't work in campaigns. Yeah. Big announcements work. Momentum helps.
But they never actually come to fruition. I mean, we're still really waiting for so many promises given by every party over my entire lifetime. Every election promise, almost everyone, except for taking the tolls off that bridge. We're still waiting. Crossing at the Fraser wasn't even on the list. The Massey Tunnel. The bridge, the whole, like, whatever, not even on the list.
Wild. So, of course, that's called pavement politics. It's how you win elections, though. And that's what this is about. And so John Rustad gets it. He's got some pretty amazing people now working for him that left BC United. You've got all the most powerful backroom people now are in on the conservative side. And some of the federal liberals are on the John Rustad train of success. And the people who were behind Christy Clark's victory in 2014 are all working for Rustad now. All those same people, they see victory in their, you know, in their path there.
She didn't win in 2017. The only
campaign that the NDP can run now is a fear campaign to make sure that their base shows up in a big way.
Yeah. And the mushy middle who wants somebody who believes in science.
But what are they offering?
Science and women's rights and body autonomy and all of those things. Pardon?
Science doesn't win elections, neither does money. Those things don't win elections.
I think a pandemic has changed that. I think that you could have said that because the Harper government ripping up all of the climate change studies that had been done, like ordering the destruction of actual science, did piss off some people, but it was only this much because we weren't seeing the effects of climate change the way we do now. Are people ready to swing all the way to the left, to the BC Greens, because they're freaked out by atmospheric rivers and wildfire seasons and the chaos of extreme weather events like the hurricane we just saw blow out all of North Carolina? Like, holy crap. It's like, I think that is a pavement issue now more than ever before for the mushy middle moderate that these two parties, because it is a two-party race, must win over. And I think having extreme views in either direction, and we often talk about the left extreme being just as wing nutty as the way out right extreme, who can pull into the center most in the next, what? Oh my God, we're like days away from going to the polls, right?
Saturday. And I don't know. I mean, I think that it's waiting for the NDP to do something that will interest anybody, and they're not. And they haven't provided anything that's exciting. And so, you know, maybe there's more to come, but the time is running out for them. And I don't see a lot of hope for them. But that being said, they might have polling and they might know that their NDP or people will show up. But generally, this province is center-right. We win, you know, over the last 100 years, there's only a couple of times with NDP, you know, being in there. So, and fiscally, when you talk about management, if you want to, the argument that NDP can manage our finances is not one that they can ever make because every time.
Okay, this is not a campaign video for the Conservative Party. I'm going to hold the campaign train because you've literally said not one thing of note of anybody else.
Let me finish.
It's unspun, George, and you're very much sounding like a conservative wank right now.
You can't win an argument on finance by the NDP. So they can't spin that they're good at finances. They're not.
I never said that. I'm just like, okay, you're starting to sound like the guy who sits on CNN and talks about all conservative things are great. Oh, I wiped the floor with them the other night. Let's talk about other things because it's just...
Well, I mean... Anything today, Jody? Can I speak? Can I actually retort to, it's not a conservative viewpoint. You brought up the finances as something. I would say the NDP have a real challenge using that as an argument. Rustad's playing pavement politics. He's winning that game. They can't bring healthcare. They can't use that because people obviously, based on the polling and the stuff you heard at that meeting, is that the British Columbia don't trust him at healthcare. So what's the NDP got? What do they got to prove? They got nothing. They got nothing unless they only can use trust us, stay the course. That's what their argument is. Stay the course, which we've talked about, is their plan, and that plan's not working. Not working. So we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Yes.
What do you want? I'm letting you talk. Go ahead.
Speaking of debates, it's a vice presidential debate. Very interesting. When you talk about the mushy middle, there's a chance where J.D. Vance, really his job there was exactly what you're talking about. It's really about focusing on how do I bring back some of the people that might think Trumpism is too far. And I think he did a pretty good job of that. And I think, the debate was kind of a wash, but what do you think?
I thought that Tim Walz looked like he was going to throw up off the top, which was like not helpful to his cause because he looked really nervous and he was not even remotely polished. And in every other time that I'd heard him speak, he seemed really comfortable in his own skin. Mind you, that's a great deal of pressure and a lot of eyeballs. Where J.D. Vance had that, I need to look like this is easy. And so he put on his pre-mega hat and tried to move, shift. But he really, like, while Tim Walz, after the first commercial break, when Tim Walz found his footing and realized, okay, I'm not going to have a heart attack, and challenged J.D. Vance on some real red meat issues. Like, do you believe that Donald Trump won in 2020? And the non-answer was astonishing. And then into abortion and fact-checked. Tim Walz fact-checked J.D. Vance on that. And women heard that so loudly. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of really massive stumbles, I think, for the Republican vice presidential candidate in the latter half of that debate. But it's proven that most people don't watch the entire thing because they just don't care. They just don't, especially the mushy middle types. They'd be like, okay, everybody's still talking. I mean, there was no like...
I think the moderators went hard at him on the issue of his time in China and the Tiananmen Square, where were you? And he couldn't answer it. He finally had to admit, okay, I misspoke. Took a while to get there. So it's hard for him because he'd been attacking J.D. Vance for being a liar and not telling the truth. And yet, you know, okay, but wait a minute. So that is where one area I saw him fumble for sure. Is it enough to worry about? But I think that what I liked, you know, what gave me hope a little bit, even if no matter where you are on the political spectrum, is the way they ended it. I don't know if you watched at the end, they shook hands.
I did.
Had a little chat. The partners came up. It was very like, okay, that's how politics are supposed to be. You're supposed to have this. Yes, you don't agree. You have a debate. And then you get, thank you very much. Have a good day. You know, we don't agree, but let's not like.
Yeah, see at the polls.
Yeah.
Because you can guess all you want. You can look around. It's the reason why they play the Super Bowl, because on paper, there's clearly a better team. But does the better team always win? No. That's why you play the game. And this is definitely a game. So all of the history and all, don't you know who you think you are? All the I've been here, done that. No. He could kick a dog. He was not the premier. He was not. And my passion is about what I have listened to and witnessed over the last week, because I actually moderated a debate on seniors' healthcare with leaders who would be making decisions in those lanes. And then I listened to the full leadership debate for 90 minutes. And then I attended in person a 2-hour leadership sort of summit of swords. And to be honest with you, I don't see a clear winner, but I also don't see a clear loser. I don't. And I don't have a political stripe. I don't look at it. And for unspun purposes, I would say that that's unusual, because typically it looks like someone's definitely winning. To me, there doesn't appear that. There is talking points and people who are making, you know, their, well, this is the way it is. It's like, well, it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't. It's shaky. It's shaky ground for everybody. Because guess what? All of the problems, the addiction and mental health issues, the homelessness problems, the affordability crisis, the housing crisis, all of those things are not unique to this province. You cannot pin all of that on one party in one province as much as you would hope to, because people are seeing it not just in this province, but across the country and across the continent and around the world. And people that are like, 4 years ago, I was better off. Well, no shit. All of us were. There was a pandemic. Yeah,
of course, I mean, you might be dealing with that federally, because they're, you know, Bloc Quebec lies their way. They're pushing
that.
There might be another, call, you know, non-confidence vote. The Liberals might get the boot before we know it. There's a lot of game playing right now in Ottawa, and we may be in another election soon after we get through this provincial one in Canada. I'm like, oh, not another election. But, you know, they're definitely trying to get what they want federally, those the Bloc and NDP are kind of whatever. But it's going to be interesting.
Well, explain that. With your political background, explain what you think happened there with Jagmeet Singh and the federal NDP in ripping up the proverbial agreement, because there was no ripping to be done. It was a supply and confidence agreement. Like, it's like, we will support you as a government so that you do not. Yeah. And then he went like, but not right now.
Props. He's got to build his brand, and it's not working for him really. But I think that Trudeau's doing a better job of rebuilding his brand by going on shows like Colbert. But, you know, the Bloc have their very specific criteria that they need in Quebec. And right now they're going, this is the best time for us to negotiate on very specific things in order to keep this government in power. But you sort of wonder, okay, well, great. Meanwhile, Poilievre's going, sure, you can sign that deal, but the day I win and get a majority, if that's the case, if that happens, whatever you get, I'm taking away from you. Because, you know, the chance of Poilievre winning Quebec are minimal. He'll be potentially, you know, majority or minority, but who knows what will happen. But I think that Trudeau is doing a better brand build than the NDP's doing for their party, and walks in it for Quebec. That's all they care about. They
just want I want to just put out there, just so people understand, because I don't know the deep details, but Quebec separatist leader is holding Trudeau to ransom is the worldwide headline, right?
Yeah.
Yves-François Blanchet say liberals must pass legislation or lose support of the party propping up the government. And the specifics are that Canada's embattled prime minister is very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Blanchet says, or tells The Guardian, that the liberals must act swiftly to enshrine protections for dairy farmers, boost payments to seniors to stave off fatal vote of non-confidence. So he warned that unless both pieces of legislation are passed into law by October 29th, right, his party would begin discussions with other parties to trigger a federal election.
And they probably will be, I would imagine, because Trudeau doesn't want an election yet. He needs to rebuild his brand. And NDP don't want an election right now because they want to build their brand. And Pierre, he's ready to go. And I'm ready. The sooner they have it, the better is the Conservatives. Their momentum is now, and we talked earlier about momentum. You don't want to lose momentum. You don't want to go back. So Eby, 3 years ago, should have had the election. You know, have the election today if he could. But in 6 months, could he have a majority? You know, he might be a has-been by then. You know,
he might. But what? How does a Conservative government impact the Bloc, though? Like, if they do trigger this election, which it looks like they might, who knows? Because I don't know what the repercussions are of passing those two things into law. I don't know enough about it. But if Pierre Poilievre becomes prime minister, how does that impact the Bloc, or does it? Is it just another?
If he has a majority that over all the other parties combined, if he has a majority, he can do anything he wants as long as our Senate no longer is biased, apparently. It's independent, so he doesn't have to worry about the Senate turning down anything that he decides, any law he decides to change. So he can reverse whatever he wants. Will he? I don't know. He also has some seats in Quebec that he'd like to get back. There are some conservative seats that could win back in Quebec that he'd like. And Ontario is a very unusual place down by Ottawa, that area. You know, it's kind of like, a little bit like Quebec. So he needs Ontario. He needs to win Ontario. But he also wants a majority, and that's not easy in Canada anymore. It doesn't happen very often.
No.
Majority.
No. Especially with the lackluster vibes that are around conservatives, the ramifications of conservative governments at the provincial level that we've seen in Ontario with Doug Ford, as well as with Danielle Smith in Alberta. Because some of the less than people friendly decisions that have been made, some of the boom bust and echo of that is like, oh, oops.
And if Poilievre gets a minority, who's he going to partner with? Not NDP, not the Liberals. It's going to be the Bloc.
It's going to be the Bloc for sure. So maybe that's how. Okay.
Yeah, that's how he might. That's how he. So he won't. Whatever Bloc gets right now, they likely will be able to keep. So get it now. Get what he can, and he'll get it because Liberals. You know, Bloc hold this balance of power like Denver, but like it's so weird that we have a separatist party that basically drives the agenda in our country. It's like, okay.
It is wild. Like, and the dairy farmers? Yeah, like, that's the thing? Who doesn't love our farmers? But why that as a thing? Like, is that lobby so powerful?
Yeah, that's it. That's why.
See, I've learned a lot over how many months. I must listen sometimes, George. Is there anything else that we wanted to get to here?
Not going away. I'm going to try and do this for my trip next week. We'll see if I can do it on my phone or wherever. I don't know what the internet's going to be like.
He's going away. I'm going to make him do it. We're going to get George all like liquored up from Europe. One more thing I want to question you about was, and it's super random, but the Jack Smith unsealing of the new January 6th.
You are nerding out on that.
I was nerdy going on that 165 pages. I was like in it. It kind of reads a little bit like a spy novel because it really does explain what Donald Trump was doing between Super Tuesday in November when he lost the election and like the days that followed when the whole I only need 11,421 votes and all that, whatever. and then riling up the people to storm the Capitol. And Mike Pence phoned him apparently to wish him a Merry Christmas. And what? Donald Trump was like, "You need to not certify this election." And he was like, "I don't have the right to change the election results." And he's like, "You're weak and people will hate you." Like, learning the words that this man used, not in an official capacity, which is what Jack Smith is alleging, right? Like, he is putting it down. This is not an immunity case that the Supreme Court was talking about. So when James Comey dropped that letter about Hillary Clinton that turned out to be a nothing burger just prior to the election in 2016, Trump said, "Beautiful, great." And now he's like, "Election interference." What do you think it is? Do you think it's inappropriate to have these things drop just out of election, or it doesn't matter? Like,
a little bit. And it makes you wonder if the NDP are holding on to something here in BC.
Oh,
so, who knows? Really? I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what they're doing. I don't know. I thought they'd have more stuff that would be quite horrible, but obviously it doesn't look good when in America when this happened, because there's a lot of distrust of their legal system now. And I think doing these kind of, you know what, like, we have a writ in the state, they have their period of time for, like, just, you know what, let's just let them do the election and let's not do these things and let the people decide. And but it seems like, how can you not perceive that as political? It seems political to me.
Yeah. I just before we drop our Twitter handles on everybody, I'd like to point out that Elon Musk has lost 80% of the value in Twitter since he bought it. But it's working for him because he's also the wealthiest man on the planet. I think he has now, I think the number was $12 trillion. And in 3 months, that went from 12 to 14 in 3 months. So I don't know that it's a big
problem. How much do you think NASA to send that spaceship up there to save those NASA astronauts? I mean, that's a price tag I'm sure America's paying for to Elon Musk, way beyond what he paid for Twitter.
For sure. Okay, well, you can be found, for people who want to fight with you independently of me, at George
underscore
Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance. If you want to fight with me, I will block you on Twitter. I will let you speak on a podcast, though, because I like George. And we love to fight on Unspun Podcast. So make sure you like and subscribe. Follow us on our Twitter handles. Herb Communications, also a great follow. I love your TikTok. I don't know. It's fun for me. TikTok. You talk like this on TikTok.
My other character.
It's very good. It's very good. Okay. See ya.
Bye.